and to pursue bin Laden. Nothing more than that, Rich stressed. Massoud understood, indicating that the conversation could continue. Rich unfolded a map and asked about AQ. Massoud, who loved maps, spent the next hour providing detailed intelligence about the enemy. He also explained the United Front's capabilities and intentions. They could hold the Panjshir Valley, which emptied into the Somali plains north of Kabul, and they were contesting other areas, such as south of Mazar-e-Sharif. Massoud explained their source network, which extended into the Pashtun areas. He also noted the limits of their material support and their lonely war. Rich and Massoud discussed how circumstances had changed and how preparing for a stronger alliance between the CIA and the United Front was important. Each party would need to be positioned to seize opportunities. As expected, the team quickly developed various health problems. They started popping Cipro tablets. One big, tough operator succumbed to a stomach bug that put him out of commission. All he could do was sleep and wake up to retch and clear his bowels. Rich grew concerned and asked for a local doctor, who was summoned. The physician arrived with his medical bag in hand but no shoes on his feet and treated our officer. Rich realized that building our allies' capabilities would take far more than he initially thought. Our Afghan partners had almost nothing in a material sense. They did have exquisite local knowledge, hard-honed fighting skills, and tough lives built on pride and guts. Rich and his team stayed for a week, exchanging intelligence and exploring how best to cooperate. Under Rich's leadership, the team masterfully rekindled the relationship. Massoud appointed Engineer Aref, the head of intelligence, to serve as his principal in this expansion of the liaison relationship. He was scruffy, verbose, crafty, corrupt, and a good, reliable partner. Amrullah Saleh worked for Aref. Amrullah would be the main point of contact with Rich. Amrullah was young, brilliant, honest, and devoted to a free Afghanistan. With perfect English, good technical skills, and emerging leadership traits, his role rapidly expanded as Massoud and Aref gave him more authority. Rich and his team soon established an encrypted communications link with Amrullah inside Afghanistan so he could coordinate our efforts with Massoud, Aref, and others. Over the coming months, our reinvigorated mission against AQ and the Taliban garnered more enthusiasm from Massoud and his sub-commanders. CTC supplied intelligence collection tools, background data, intelligence requirements, and money. Massoud and the United Front began supplying us more intelligence, which improved steadily as the trust and connectivity grew. This deployment paved the way for more teams, more cooperation, more intelligence, and covert action. We would deploy 4 more teams in the next 18 months. There would be many more meetings in neighboring countries with our Afghan partners. Global Operations. Rich and his CTC officers worked against AQ and their affiliates, not just in Afghanistan, but around the world. Rich's branch accounted for only a portion of CTC's resources, both people and funding. Kofor, Ben, and I scattered the other resources among branches working against Hezbollah, Hamas, the FARC, PKK, the Tamil Tigers, and about 20 other terrorist organizations. There were natural tensions among the operational branches. Each, of course, wanted more resources. The Hezbollah unit, as an example, had a strong argument since Hezbollah had killed hundreds of U.S. diplomats, Marines, soldiers, and others in the last few years. Hezbollah was the primary proxy of the Iranian regime, the world's most potent state sponsor of terror, which operated globally, including inside the United States. The FARC was waging a horrible narco-insurgency in Colombia, endangering the political stability of the country and the region. The Tamil Tigers had pioneered the use of suicide bombers wearing explosive vests and suicide naval attacks. CTC also managed the special mission teams which deployed on sensitive surveillance missions, incident responses, and training. These also required resources. A big part of my job was balancing these important competing units and seeking to build synergy where possible among them. The foundation for all CTC's work was intelligence collection and analysis. If we could not identify the enemy, uncover their plans and intentions, find them, and know the surrounding operational environment, we were out of business. There would be no intelligence product or covert action service for our customers. When I arrived at CTC, less than half of all CT intelligence came from unilateral sources. Foreign liaison accounted for the bulk of our CT reporting. Some stations relied almost entirely on foreign liaison for CT intelligence. This was acceptable for stations dealing with our closest allies, but not for others. We could not be dependent on foreign liaison. To generate more intelligence, CTC needed more unilateral sources. Ops officers around the world pursued many targets, CT sources being only one category on their operating directive. I wanted officers from all the geographic divisions penetrating terrorist groups. Toward that end, CTC needed to provide greater guidance and incentive for these officers. CTC already provided excellent targeting data, but there was more to recruiting than simply knowing the target. How an officer recruited a terrorist mattered. It was different from pitching a foreign diplomat, military officer, or trade official. Perhaps the most important difference was simply the risk. A foreign diplomat could report the pitch, perhaps resulting in a diplomatic flap. A terrorist could respond in other ways, such as tossing a grenade at the case officer, which had recently happened. Our officer barely escaped down a stairwell as the grenade exploded behind him. Only a handful in the clandestine service could recruit a terrorist. It was difficult and required unique talent and courage. It also demanded better guidance and training for those officers engaged in these recruitment operations. We also faced the dilemma of employing those who may have murdered people or supported those who did. That, of course, is what terrorists do. In our operations, there were always limits, morally, legally, and politically. We did not recruit, support, and encourage any asset to murder innocent people, even if such action advanced their access and influence within a terrorist group. That was flat wrong. But where did we draw the line? What about those terrorists who had killed in the past but now wanted to cooperate? We would consider each on a case-by-case basis. What if the victims were U.S. citizens? We would report the crime to the Department of Justice and seek guidance. What if a potential source provided material support to a terrorist operation but did not pull the trigger? We would, more often than not, recruit and run the source to gain intelligence to stop the attack. But sometimes we failed. What if the source served as a communications link for an assassin who planned to kill a foreign official? We had a duty to warn the foreign official and did so, while trying to keep our source alive and viable for the future. That was not always possible. If a CT source was good, we used his report served as a communications link for an assassin who planned to kill a foreign official. We had a duty to warn the foreign official and did so, while trying to keep our source alive and viable for the future. That was not always possible. If a CT source was good, we used his reporting to stop attacks, which could undermine the source's future utility or his security. If recruiting a CT source was hard, keeping good ones in play was even harder. In 1999, most CIA operations officers had not experienced these challenges. They did not appreciate the risk and the operational conflicts. Some simply did not have the incentive or the necessary skills to tackle such dangerous targets. It was our mission at CTC to change that. The first step was to teach operations officers how to recruit terrorists. We pulled together a team of experts, including psychologists, analysts, and recruiters. After the first running, I knew something was missing. We needed greater expertise, greater experience. I asked an Arab allied service to send us an instructor. Some in the clandestine service took umbrage, reflecting a misplaced arrogance about our own capabilities. I argued that we trained liaison services all over the world, so why should we not benefit from some of their training? Our Arab ally graciously agreed and sent one of their most experienced CT officers to teach and to help us develop our curriculum. CTC taught scores of operations officers from throughout the clandestine service that recruiting terrorists is hard, but possible. After discussions with COFER, I launched an initiative to build a strong cadre of operations officers who would be permanently assigned to CTC.